There are many methods of writing music, from applying Lou Schoenberg's serial killer technique to manipulating I Ching hexagrams to employing algorithms and blues to ad-libbing polyphony on an auto harp to sampling the kettle drum line of Ilya Muromets and putting it through a vocoder.
That's my kind of music.
I'll figure
it out. That sample, Muromets.
Yep. But perhaps the most misunderstood process is when the act occurs paranormally without any input from the composer. Music mongers who practice this form of automatic writing claim that when they compose, they merely watch disconnectedly while another entity, often of a light green pallor and carrying little in the way of identification, enters them and takes control of the composing mechanism. They are no more responsible for what melodic lines come out or which way the accidentals are pointing than a marionette on the end of a string dangled by a bunraku puppeteer is accountable for the tingle in a psychic's teeth when he eats a wheat thin harvested from the magnetic center of a crop circle while watching the love suicides of Sonezaki. The composer could be mentally doodling on a Victoria's Secret order form with the wet residue from a week-old lump of cheese whiz, while the existential force within, often dubbed Mrs. Inspiration by music theory scholars.
Mrs. Inspiration, dear.
Yes. Is creating a sublimely perturbing little etude for dust mites. There they are now. Videotape recordings of such composers at work bear this out. They tend to enter a trance state, not unlike Montana. Their heads loll to one side, and their tongues flap unchecked like a window slat in a Class 4 hurricane. Often a number 2 Dixon pencil will materialize in the composer's hand, around which the fingers involuntarily coil like a like that! Yes, like that! Or also like a broken slinky wrapped round the head of a Ouagadougou medicine man dressed up for Mbaxi Day. Their faces flush like an American standard, and the hairs on their napes stand up and approximate the follicle version of Sydenham's Korea. Did we lose the sound there?
Sydenham's... That's... I know that piece. I sang in that.
Yes, did you? Sometimes they froth at the mouth and act as if they're having a religious experience. No matter the tune that results is as profane as a banshee polka. But occasionally the consequent music is...
The consequent music is exquisite.
Contemplative. Stimulating. Or better yet, marketable. In which case, the composer wakes up with a channeling buzz strong enough to yank a set of graphite horseshoes off of an electromagnetized Clydesdale.
And there they go.
At this point, he may want to have a chat with the voices in his head and find out if there is an ulterior motive for his sudden spurt of autonomic creativity. But as a rule, neither the little green wraiths nor the bunraku puppeteers ever offer constructive commentary. They merely tug a little harder on the strings or turn up the vibrationary volume around the crop circle. Is it any wonder, then, why many of these automatoonsmiths feel as if they're trying to...
Wow! I like that!
Automatoonsmiths. Feel as if they're trying to dog paddle the wrong way up a water slide filled with barracudas hungry for triads. That's them, all right. Yes, it is!
Yes, it certainly is!
At least to us.
Automatoonsmiths.
Us being, in case you haven't figured it out by now, Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar.
Described words of a harsh planet.
Whose policy towards automatic writing is to just let it happen and deal with the consequences later. This very 222nd essay, for instance, was well on its way toward a vigorously satisfying investigation of payola in the new music industry and why there isn't enough to go around anymore, when this writer was mugged by a muse and forced instead to blather about cheese whiz, dog paddles, and vocoders. And no, it didn't feel like a religious experience, but rather like...
How would you know anyway?
I've read about it.
I see.
But rather like a touch of the heaves, plus my fingertips got all bloody because I was going through the motions of typing on my Underwood when in reality I was sitting in front of a barrel cactus.
Nobody knows what an Underwood is.
Smith Corona? Smith and Wesson?
Wesson, yes.
So excuse me...
Excuse you!
...if my take on automatic writing, and especially its spine-tingling consequences, is perhaps a bit less forgiving than that of, say, Calvo's.
Indeed.
Yeah.
What did that have to do with anything?
I'm not to blame this time. It was automatically written for me.
But I thought it had to do with our guest, James Bond.
It does. Can't you tell? I'm sure he'll corroborate certain allusions in the essay.
I suppose he will. Well, yes, James Bond is our guest in about.
Wait, he's reaching for the microphone. It's too early.
It's too early. Don't touch that microphone.
All right.
Instead, we'll just listen to some music by Mike Frengel, followed by some music by Alex Keller, all unavailable to you, our listening audience, except through this show, released commercially.
So there.
So stick your ears right into your tape recorder and get ready. Mike Frengel, this is called The Coffee Kings, and we'll follow that up in another minute by Alex Keller's Gun. That was Alex Keller's Cosmetic here on the What Do You Want for Free episode of the Calvis and Damian New Music Bazaar. These are all items sent to us that are not otherwise available to the general public.
Well, that one could be if you sat underneath an Airstream trailer for about 60 minutes.
Yes, that's right.
That's how I felt.
Yes.
All vibratory.
All Airstreamy.
That's
right. Yes. And it's the same thing with our guest, James Bond.
Well, he's underneath of an Airstream trailer?
No, well, yeah. I mean, but some of his pieces are, because we have this piece, Implosion, here, and Where Do We Go From Here, and Babylon, which is one of my favorites. And they're all free, too, you know. I mean, they're not anything you can go to the store to purchase.
Ah.
So everything
is that by design, do you think?
We'll
find
think
out.
That's by design, yes. Mm-hmm. We'll find that out. Let's listen to another one of these What Do You Want for Free pieces. This is
I think we have the name of the show, do we?
Yes. This came to us yesterday from Elaine Tomazzi Freitas, who's up from South America for a residency in New York City. And this is called Sounds for December. Thank you. Elaine Tomasi Freitas, that's an unreleased recording of a collection of her music. That's called Sounds for December, 1998. She will be joining us on the show as soon as we make our arrangements for our tour of New York City.
She's come all the way from Brazil to New York, and she can't go another couple of crummy hours.
Oh, she can.
Oh,
she can.
Yes.
But I mean, I thought that if we happen to get down to New York before then, we could talk to her then. But yes, she's perfectly happy to come up to Vermont.
And
before,
she could bring the
before
rest of
the snow flies.
Yes. She can bring a lot of other folks with her.
Such as
Wendy Lee Chambers.
We got a request, you know, that for the final Alice composer to be on our show.
Alice in Chains?
Yes, that's right. Well, listen, so we don't crowd James Baum's appearance on our show. Let's play this next tune, and then we'll come back and bant some more.
Excellent.
This is Yulan, music by Kwai Dong.
Oi, eu sou Eufrásio Prates e você está ouvindo ao Calvos and Damians New Music Bazaar, seu alerta vermelho para a música nova.
Here on WGDR Plainfield.
Wow.
The only Portuguese introduction to Calvos and Damian you're likely to get until we get Elaine Tomasi Freitas on the show.
That's right. Maybe she can speak it in Japanese.
Yeah. Yes. You just heard Guaidong's Yulan, piece for tape. And it is the top of the hour. It is time to introduce our guest.
One would hope.
One would hope, yes. Are you prepared to introduce our guest? Do you have something to say?
I think it can be said very easily this way.
Who are you?
Bond. James Bond.
Come on.
Bond. James Bond. James Bond.
Was there ever any doubt?
I suppose not, except that he sounds like he has a bit of a speech impediment. Because
that was the recording.
Our guest's name is B-O-H-N. Did he have a little, maybe something in his nose that kept making him say Bond?
He had a stirrup in his in his nasal compartment.
I thought he was supposed to have that in your ear.
It runs from the ear through the eustachian tube to the nose. Okay.
I understand. Now, James Bond, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
It's good to hear your voice at last because we have been abusing it so often for the past several weeks. We're going to jump right in and play some music of yours and then come right back. We're going to play a couple of your preludes for piano. Give us a quick intro and then we'll come back and talk about you.
These pieces were performed by Tomoko Taguchi. She's a Japanese pianist who did her master's degree out in Montana or Wyoming, I think. It's been a couple of years since the recording's been made, but she's a real monster pianist. And it's a number four in particular is really, really difficult. I never thought could be played at that tempo, but she pulled it off.
So we're going to listen to 1, 4, and 6, I think you said?
Sure, 1.
1, 4, and 6.
Piano, nice titles.
Piano playlist. We got to work on titles with James Bond. Mm-hmm. James Bond. Well, of course, when you have a name like that, you don't need titles, do you?
Yeah.
Thank you. Numbers 1, 4, and 6 from your piano preludes, music of James Bond, and they have dandy titles. You just say piano prelude number 1, 4. It doesn't sound as good as these titles. What's the Frequency, Kenneth? And Slicker Than a Greased Weasel, and Take the Schenker Cure. I like the Schenker Cure. I like those. I like those titles. They make the pieces better.
Yeah, as I was mentioned before, I've been working on these series, and I haven't come up with clever titles for all of them yet, and so I haven't been using the clever titles by and large yet. And once I finish this series, if I still don't have them all figured out, I'll have to do some sort of web-based thing, I think. I'm not sure.
Clever titles is one of our sidelines. Yeah. We're fairly cheap, too.
Okay. Yeah. We'll get the cards later.
So we sort of welcome you here to the East, because you are a new academic resident of the East. Tell us about yourself, how you got here, and your background, because you write real crunchy tunes, both electronic and acoustic.
Well, I started out at Madison, did some school in there.
Wait, Madison what?
Wisconsin.
Oh, not Alabama.
Or New Jersey.
That's true.
Or Oregon. Saskatchewan. So, all right, Wisconsin, I get it.
Then I moved to Urbana, Illinois, did some schooling there near Paris, Illinois. And after I was done with my schooling, I did some work at Illinois State in the tech field, doing some computer work over there. And then recently, I moved to University of Massachusetts at Dartmouth, which is not to be confused with some school down the road, I guess. But it's actually in Massachusetts, not Vermont.
And how is it that you sort of float among the academia with these, especially with these pieces that don't seem to have any, they're not held back?
Well, it's part of it is my gig over there isn't actually composition, it's electronic music, and it's when the youngsters come to me, I always tell them that never underestimate the power of being able to plug things in.
Yes!
it's a very important skill. They seem to take me seriously over there as a composer, but, you know, they don't know me that well yet. And it's a weird composition world out there. There's all sorts of things happening, and sometimes people take the humor seriously, sometimes they don't. It's kind of depends on who's on the other side.
You glossed over your stay at Urbana. You didn't happen to be a Brun baby, were you?
No. In general, I just don't like to become tagged with I'm so-and-so student or I'm so-and-so student. One of the things that's really great about that institution is that there's so many composition teachers there, and so I really did float around. There's only one teacher that I studied with for more than one semester, and other than that, I just kind of looked at it as a banquet, try a little bit of everything.
A smorgasbord.
Amalgamated.
Yes. Well, the first music I ever heard of yours was this, a little piece that appeared both on your website and also on the Frog Peak Collaborations project. This is, you say Babylon?
Yeah, it's
yeah,
Babylon.
Yeah, Babylon. Wonder about somebody who seems to have a sense of humor. Baby Lon, that's by James Bond. That was part of a collection that was based on the sound text of Chris Mann.
I can almost perform that. I can't do it today, but when I have the text in front of me, I can almost do it in a minute, 30 seconds. Chris Mann does it in a minute, 9 seconds, so I'm almost that hyperactive, but...
He's very hyperactive.
Oh, jeez.
Yes,
it's something else.
And he does that live as well. He did there was a performance, we played an excerpt from it on this program a month or so ago, a live performance of a 20-minute piece of his that was nonstop, just like that. I might want to save this for later in the program, but a lot of the techniques that we use, and I use the collective we here because we all do them, are familiar techniques. And there's been a discussion recently on one of the lists about music that sounds like the tools used to create it.
Yeah, it's a big problem.
You want to do that now, or should we wait for that one?
Well, do you want to mention the software package?
Sure, why not?
It's a SoundHack by Tom Erba. The very fast things that flutter from ear to ear, though, are actually my own software, but it's through one of the old computer languages.
Yep.
But the sort of the glimmering sounds, especially near the end, they should subtitle that album the SoundHack album, because I looked through the notes the other day and every other person was using SoundHack.
Right.
It's this great little program that Tom Erba wrote, and it does convolution and mutation and all sorts of things with neato space alien type names applied to them.
what are those techniques, and why? Certainly, you can see why they're popular, because they have they make some neat sounds.
Convolution is a little different, but convolution is a technique where you take two sounds, and the computer does a sound analysis of sound A and analysis of sound B, and it finds what's in common between them. So you take a C major chord and a rainstorm, you get a C major rainstorm.
Yep.
It's really amazing stuff. Mutation is the opposite, where you start with one sound and it gradually becomes the other sound. That's sort of the quick explanation.
Audio morphing.
Yeah. It's really addictive. I mean, you sit there and you find all these sounds to stick together, and sometimes you get great sounds, sometimes you don't, and you just throw them away and you try some new combinations. It's a lot like the old walking on the beach method of composition. Like, oh, I like that rock. Oh, I like this rock.
It's not exactly like Beethoven's Notebooks in that way.
No, not at all. It's one of the new things since technology. The whole montage collage thing is a lot easier since record technology.
And what has it provided? Again, to refer to the discussion that's going on, there's a really big argument about folks who are saying we have worked very hard to develop skills, techniques, etc., in our electroacoustics, and we, to put it bluntly, resent people coming in and using these package programs to do every bit as keen sounds as we could do after we worked with them for 6 months. So what's kind of the result of that? What's going on right now, especially when you invite your kids to come in and learn how to plug stuff in?
Yeah, well, if you look at it, people think of electronic music as a new medium, and of course it is a new medium. But in another sense, if you think of it as an analog to older media, you can think of various techniques or various software packages as being akin to an instrument. And it'd be hard to come up with an argument that only Adolphe Sax can write pieces for saxophone, that he somehow has intellectual property over the saxophone. And of course, Tom Erba is graciously, gives out his software as freeware. It's one of the greatest, and anyone who dabbles should download it. It's really a neat program, and it runs really quickly. It's a nice program. And so it's the thing is to think of it as akin to an instrument. And of course, the question is, how as a composer do you use it so that you don't sound like everyone else? It's not that easy of a question to answer.
I think that when you write for a violin or a clarinet, you also kind of hear the package.
Yeah, exactly. You're stuck with that shallow register and the little mid-tone register and the screechy high register, and you're going to get that whether your name is Stravinsky or Schoenberg. It's part of the instrument, just like granular synthesis. It's going to sound granular no matter what your last name is.
Let's hear another piece of yours. What's a good one to follow up this discussion with?
Let's see. Probably something that doesn't use another sound.
Good idea.
But something still in the electronic vein. Why don't we try Implosion?
Sure. Implosion. This is a piece that we actually played either last week or the week before. Very, very interesting piece with the vibraphone. This is Jeffrey Brady?
Yeah.
On the vibraphone. This is Implosion, music of James Bond. Thank you. Implosion. Music by James Bond.
Now, this is the keen piece on different levels. I mean, there's a great thread of humor running through it, and there's some technical neat things happening. And I just want to ask James Bond, 007, if this was also written to be performed with live electronics, if someone would, or how was it, how did you put this together?
Well, the reverb that you're hearing and things, the stuff that sounds like live processing was done after this is put on a collection, and to sort of the guy who remixed it sort of added stuff to it, which he gave me, you know, I listened to it before it went out. But, you know, I'm sort of cavalier about the performance of works in the sense of that, you know, you would have often people, you know, would play a piece for harpsichord on piano or vice versa, and that there's this sort of interchangeability, and that I don't believe in this sort of you write a piece and it has to be performed exactly as it's written. If someone doesn't say that it can't be done with live electronics, that, you know, you shouldn't use it, and that it's something that I would look at, but no, it wasn't specified, the live electronics part.
Well, it could be, though.
It could be. Yeah, it could be.
Okay.
You see,
I do have other pieces where I have options where if you use live electronics, this is what you do. But it's hard to expect people to lug around a lot of equipment. So you're lucky to get a DAP machine and two speakers. So, you know, I'm not going to count on a board and a bunch of processing equipment. So I don't have a single piece that actually requires that sort of setup.
We have that too, although it we have a different reason.
What do we have?
A cavalier attitude of how pieces are played, but not because we give the performers that much leeway. It's just because they can't
take
it.
But you see, you do seem, what's the word, relaxed about not only how your music is presented, but also in the construction of it. Not to say that it isn't well done, but rather you're not dogmatic about a lot of things. As a matter of fact, you said something that had us our sides hurting a little bit when we were listening to the previous piece. You said intellectual property doesn't exist in a society with Jerry Springer. What do you mean by that?
Well, it's, you know, people stake so much upon what they've done. They try and make themselves, I'm part of this tradition. I see myself as part of this tradition. And they have such a vested interest in this tradition. And there's the thing that's exciting about our society isn't any one strain of activity. It's the fact that there's all this activity going on out there, so much of which is interesting. It's evidenced by the show and it's evidenced by all sorts of things, not necessarily Jerry Springer, but it's a very exciting society we live in, and to sort of be dogmatic about I'm following this strain of activity, it's just, it seems very confining and limiting. I mean, I don't know anyone who wears just green every day. And I don't know anyone who only wears polo shirts every day. I mean, in the 80s, it was very close. But, you know, since we got out of the 80s, things have been a little bit, you know, more interesting. But I digress.
Well, no, you don't. You gress exactly right. Let's gress to another piece. And before we play one, how do you go about getting the ideas for a piece and making one?
Well, it sort of depends. I fluctuate between being a little, for me, what I consider to be conservative. For a lot of people, they wouldn't consider any of my stuff to be conservative, and sort of what I like to think of as freak show music. And I sort of decide upon a level of that spectrum that I'm going to fit in, and of course decide what instrumentation, who I'm going to make show up at the gig. And then it's sort of a thing of coming up of what sort of approach I want to take. And it's a lot of it deals with me not being bored when I'm sitting there with paper and pencil. Mm. You don't want to write the same piece over
right.
and over.
So how did you start? How did you actually, when was your first time saying, I want to create a replicable tune, something that I don't play that somebody else can play?
Well, my older brother is a composer as well. He was sort of a child prodigy musician. He taught himself how to play keyboards. He just picked it up on his own. And so I sort of lived in my parents have this weird quadrivium. We all had to take piano. We all had to take another musical instrument. We all had to take a sport. And we all had to take dance. For various sorts of years, and so we were all required to be in music whether we wanted to or not. And then since I grew up around my brother, him being an older brother, it was never a foreign idea to me that a person could write their own music. From my first exposure to music, I knew that if I wanted to, I could write a piece. Of course, I didn't really do that seriously until junior high, and even then, it's very embarrassing. It's every, you know,
yes.
Anyone thinks back to junior high, but
we were hoping you'd bring one of those along just for comparison.
I have a clarinet piece of yours from then.
We'll
I have that tape.
That's unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
I have pieces from my freshman year in college that I still keep, and that I you know, if someone asked to perform, I'd put it out there. But high school, no. I've got the scores, but they're still pencil and they're hidden. I can't even find them actually, but I know they're there somewhere.
Oh, we'll find them. Just let us loose where they might be. Embarrassment is our second name. Well, all right, let's listen to another piece, because so far we've heard pure electronics. We've heard electroacoustics. We've heard performer with electronics. We've heard piano. Let's hear yet another.
I guess to sort of fit with the... to get with the theme of the show, we should probably do one of the tape studies.
Wait, what theme? We have a theme?
Well, there was
sure.
The,
what do you want for free?
Oh, what do you want for free? All right.
Those are actually the ones that aren't commercially available anyway. So probably one of the tape studies we could do.
Sure, manifolds.
Yeah.
Manifolds.
Exactly.
All right, let's listen to a few of them, and we'll come back and... in a few minutes with more with James Bond here on the Calvus and Damien Show. two of the tape studies by James Bunn. Your music isn't cluttered.
I don't know. I think it's a TV generation thing. I've got a very short attention span, plus I'm hyperactive to begin with. If I'm going to take a stance on the Viennese Trinity, you know, I've always liked our man Webern, but, you know.
I just thinking in terms of even the piano preludes that we opened up with, they're very energetic, but they're simply not dense. They're very transparent.
Well, you know, the pieces are supposed to be funny and cavalier and interesting and difficult to play, but I really do have always, with those pieces, viewed them as being, you know, something that you could sensibly program with, like, you know, your other major preludes. by
Shostakovich, Bach, yeah. Huh.
Yeah, you know, if you're so inclined.
Declined.
And so getting something too thick just wouldn't be, it wouldn't really work.
As soon as you get your titles together, I think we'll be, you'll have them ready for public consumption.
Right. Those two tape studies we just heard, what were they studies of?
There were studies of computer-assisted composition.
What's that mean?
That means that rather than the composer creating a world and creating every tree and creating every rock and creating every bush or whatever, what the composer does is they create the physics of that world and they push a button and a world is created. They don't, you know, specify every element, but rather they create an environment in which the things can exist, which is to say I didn't write every little note in there, but rather I just, actually both pieces you heard are the same piece, they're just different instances of it.
There are people who somehow bristle at that thought still, mm-hmm. and because your music works so well, maybe you can address the question of why is it that one can compose that way. Effectively, one can create a world that works rather than creating every detail of that world. And how do you set to rest the idea that maybe we don't have to sweat that sharp?
Well, to go back to my analogy, I really do view it as being connected to nature, not intrinsically, but that's sort of something I always think of, in the sense of that people are very hung up in the arts in terms of they want to ascribe human intelligence to everything. And human intelligence is, you know, that's not necessarily the greatest thing in town. If you look at a cloud, there's very few people I know who would say that a cloud isn't as beautiful an object aesthetically, it's a lot of visual art, and I'm including the masters. I'm not just deriding modern art, but a lot of people would agree that clouds are as beautiful as anything a painter could come up with. But
certainly, anybody who's looked at the replication of that in a Titian painting would say the same thing. Yes, of course, the artist spent such a great time replicating that it has some inherent aesthetic that's absolutely astounding. Yeah.
And to me, art, music, whatever you know you want to deal with, it's about the product. It's not about the creator. You know, I'm really not interested in Stravinsky at all. He's, you know, he was a small man, very feeble, just not very interesting. But his music, I'm gonzo about it. And I'm not interested in whether a cloud was created by a guy who's a great artist with flowing robes who lived in a mansion, or whether it was the result of an intricate process that can be described in terms of physics. And that, frankly, I often find it freeing in the sense of that I'm a very math science based person, and so when I'm writing through composed music, there's this tendency for me to make logical decisions, and that logical decisions aren't always the greatest thing in art, because the potential is you can have something that's near redundant, like the logical next thing to do is this, and the composer does it. And, you know, how interesting is that? And these sorts of ways are ways for you to sort of remove yourself from it. But still, there's an element of control in the sense that you're the one who sets it in motion.
Let's listen to another piece. This is a great way to sort of hear what you say reflected in a piece.
Why don't we do one of the second tape studies, study two.
Sure. Let's do it. Two of the second tape studies.
Okay.
Here they come. Music by James Bond. I take back everything I said about your music not being dense.
Yeah.
Two tape studies, yeah.
I think that was so popular, so meaningful to us because everybody likes a good fugue.
Yes, yeah. You could hear the voices coming in one after another with that theme, mm-hmm. How it was inverted and the counterpoint was absolutely species counterpoint.
I'm humming it at this moment.
Yes. Tell us about those two.
Well, I always come down to people who do electronic music.
You come down. You're on a high plateau, and you come down to tell the paparazzi, all the little people about your music.
The paparazzi.
The pauper. Yes.
Yeah.
You come down.
I put on my Zarathustra jacket, and I reduce my thinking in electronic music that there's two kinds of people. There's knob guys and there's computer guys.
This is Nietzsche for preschoolers here we're doing
now. Right.
And I've always been sort of a computer guy, partially because I'm inclined in that direction to begin with, but also because the great thing about a computer is that if you know how to hack code and stuff, you can do a lot of things. You're only limited by your ability to hack code. And rather than have some sort of panning thing where if you hit a note, you can specify where it goes. If you hit a note, you can say, well, I wanted to make these 100 changes.
You just don't want to do the work.
Yeah, you don't want to do the work.
I get it.
But you can change knobs faster in a computer than is humanly possible to physically turn a knob. And you can do it 400 times a second if you want to. It's one of the drunk on power things about computers. And with that piece, why play one note when you can play 80 at once? And rather than just having an ADSR envelope, I hate to come down to tech terms.
Attack, decay, sustained release.
Turn to page 2. And rather than just have a 4-stage envelope where that's all you get. Those are very complex envelopes that are sort of randomly generated within certain bounds so that if you listen very carefully, you can pick out a specific pitch, and it comes in, it goes from this speaker to that speaker and back again, and then it comes out, and then this other pitch comes in and out. And it's the sort of thing where if you listen to the totality of it, you've got a 3-minute piece that's one event. But if you really listen to the details, it's the sort of piece where you really have to get into the details. And on a cheap stereo, that might not help you out too much. But if you had a good stereo, maybe you were able to catch some of that.
I think Damien was right about the fugue.
See?
Yeah.
No. Of course, it wasn't just cavalierly put out there.
Yes, it was. It just happened to be right this time.
Well, so it does.
Let's hear another one. This is getting good. Let's hear another one.
Do you want to do a non-computer system?
Sure. Give me a doo-wop.
Why don't we do something that's a little less funny? I've got this piece called Where Do We Go From Here, and it's fairly subdued for me. It's a piano piece played by a fellow named Camille Goodison.
Here it is, music by James Bond. Not so cavalier this time.
We'll make the judgment.
by James Bond. Where do we go from here? And that's available, we should mention this, on the mp3.com site, where you have an extensive amount of your material. So if people want to hear high-quality versions of this music, which they won't get from listening to the postings of our show, which are in real audio, but if they want to hear MP3 versions of these, they can go to mp3.com and look up your name, B-O-H-N.
Exactly.
And you can listen to some of these.
But are you thinking of having these distributed by KTEL in the near future?
Yeah, only if they can come up with them on vinyl. And we've been talking on the phone, and I'm insisting on 78s.
Oh,
they say it's going to ruin my career, but I figure, you know, if 78 is what I want, 78 is what I'm going to get.
I think that's about how many you might sell.
Aloha from Rehoboth Beach, Delaware. This is Jim Grant, and I can't help but notice that you're listening to Calvos and Damien's New Music Bazaar, your red alert for new music.
Hi, Jim. Welcome to the studio.
Oh, how did you get in here?
I don't know. You just sort of like popped right in there. Here on WGDR, Plainfield. Well, KTEL, let me tell you about KTEL.
Tell me.
Do you realize that they have the largest archive of pop music pre-19, whatever it is they normally do, available and ready to go online. It was just announced in the online press yesterday. KTEL is going to build one of the hugest pay-per-play online sites that exists. Woo! Can't wait to hear that.
I'm
Bobby
ready.
Darin. Woo! I'm there. James Bond, we can get back to you while we still have time to do that. I want to play at least one more piece of yours. Let's hear where you're going from here, though.
Yeah, let's hear a symphony. Let's hear some or your oratorios, or what about the concerti and the big choral pieces that you've been working on with your librettists? The
yes.
opera.
Oh, well, it's the next piece is for oboe band, so I'm
oh, well, that'll do.
For oboe band?
Oboe band, yeah.
I agreed to write a piece for early music ensemble and left the choice up to the person I was working with. And he chose oboe band, which is a sort of soprano, tenor, bass sort of quartet, which is actually an octet, people double. And
at
these,
the same time?
These are all early music versions of oboes, so we aren't talking about keys. We're talking
about
covering
like eight
holes.
Ducks.
Exactly, eight ducks. And so, you know, we'll see what I come up with that one. There's some other stuff in the works. One that's I actually like have stuff in the can. Of course, the whole piece isn't finished, and that's for trumpet and tape and. It's should be interesting. It's hopefully going to be more theatrical and should be have some good laughs in it. But another thing I'm thinking of is something dealing with Sam Beckett, and you know I have to go through the text dance, see if I can contact these people if they ever get back to me. But that's another thing I'm looking at.
I think the idea of an early music hobo band is good because hobos, usually you don't think of them in terms of the Renaissance. You think of them, well, they came around when the railroads. But
yeah, B&O or...
Yes,
or,
but people don't know that there were railroads during the Renaissance. Yeah, it just wasn't popular.
Well, you know, reed players in the Renaissance couldn't afford rent, so they were all nomads, you know, and they'd live out on the side of town.
Yeah.
No one really wanted to live near them anyway.
That's
so
right.
It all fits together.
The hobo band.
Wow. That calls for another tune, which will be what?
Oh, gosh, I forget what you even have.
Well,
there.
We have, of course, more preludes and tape studies, and we have...
Wait, you mean we don't get to hear the hobo band?
Most favored nation.
You mean
that's
this
pretty
is something that's in the future?
In the future, that's what you
no.
asked about.
I don't pay
don't
attention.
Don't you listen to the questions
I
you
certainly
ask?
Don't. No, of course not. I just heard hobo band, and I started to salivate.
Oh, well,
all right. What do you have, then?
Most flavored nation. That'll help you salivate.
Yeah, that would work.
Or well, what? What's good? Fragments or ballad or...
Oh, gosh. Why don't we do one of the other sound hack pieces to bring it back to our friend's commercially free available software that you can download? Why don't we do Simply Folk?
Simply Folk, all right.
Since we're on sort of an independent radio station, maybe I won't get sued for using that title. But
Simple folk.
We're independent, not by choice.
Right. It's sort of been cut loose by everyone, including our sponsors. No, that's not true. Sponsors, you can always call us here at the radio station or drop us a postcard filled with small bills.
Yes, of
course. In the meantime, we'll listen to music by James Bond. Here it is, Simply Folk. Simply Folk. Exactly what folk were you talking about? What tune was that?
baiting me. This piece was done by... I was sitting around one day traversing the internet, as is my, I like to do in my leisure, and I found a site where they sell folk instruments. And, of course, as any good commercial product does, they demonstrate it. And so any product they had, they would have someone play a tune on it. And so there were all these downloadable sound files. And I'm like, well, this is just too good to pass up. So I downloaded them all and proceeded to not document what any of the names of the titles were. And as you may have figured out, there's only one tune that I left in there to the extent that you... If you knew the tune, you'd be able to recognize it, which, of course, since I didn't write down the title of, I can't share with you. Whereas with a lot of the guitar stuff and the mandolin stuff that's in there, I like the sound of the instruments, but the progressions didn't catch me, and it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't up my alley. So rather than present it recognizably, I just made these montages of guitar chords that were fast enough so it was more of a texture than a pitch thing, and so that you're able to get this harmonic region without really ever hearing, oh, that's a guitar, or, oh, that's a mandolin. But you could actually hear for a while, you could hear the little violin bits in there, if you're listening.
Well, James Bond, you make me think of you're not the guy that records or determines whether the tree falls in the woods, but you're the one who sets it up for the tree to fall over.
Yeah, you know, it's some sucker's going to walk by there eventually, and, you know, you want to be there, but you can never count on it.
And he won't hear it because it hits him. That's great. Did you have another question?
No, you've quite covered it, I think.
James Bond, thanks so much for joining us on The Bazaar.
Thank you for having me.
And here we have, to wrap up our meeting here with James Bond, we have two of his preludes, number 2 and number 6. Preludes 2 and 6 by James Bond. Yeah, you got me doing it now, who was our guest today on The Bazaar.
And there's that major chord that ends it again.
Yeah,
those tunes again.
You just know a tonal composer from inside out.
Evidence. He even looks tonal.
He doesn't have that kind of tonal look.
When you look at his picture on the website, it's a little fuzzy, so you can't see the real tonality, but in person, it comes through like slugs.
Like slugs on butter.
Slugs on butter.
Yeah. Okay, let's listen to a real quickie by Ian Chopra, and this is called Under the Playground, Web Mix PA3. And he'll be preparing a special show segment for us sometime this winter. He won't be a guest, but he will be. So here it is, Under the Playground, and we'll be back with some last-minute insults. Under the Playground by Ian Chopra. How'd you like to be under that playground?
I've been there. Been there, done that. Yeah. That brought back memories all too clear, I'm afraid.
Hey, next week's guest, Kyle Gann, who's
we
best...
We think. Or
no,
is
no,
it?
This is confirmed.
Oh,
yes,
excellent.
Yes. He's coming up from New York. He's the lead critic at the Village Voice and an authority on Conlon Nancarrow and all of those things, but we're going to have him here as his guise as a composer.
So there's no hope for him.
He stepped down the old primrose path of compositional dementia that all the rest of us have.
Yeah.
Hey, also the t-shirt contest is in full swing.
Full swing. That's a euphemism, isn't it?
Yes, that's an euphemism for please get those entries to us before the deadline, because otherwise we'll have to extend it.
Yes, of course.
Check out the website, calvos.org, and you've brought something here to celebrate a four-year period of the century as we count down to the new one.
Yes, all too rarely do we hear this keen tune, but the Ballet Mécanique of Georges Antheil. That's the Trenton accent, isn't it?
Yeah.
Georges Antheil.
I think Antheil is the way he must have said it.
Antheil. George Antheil.
George Antheil. Say it right, huh?
From Trenton, New Jersey.
Yeah, huh?
And this was a piece with lots of pananos and percussion.
Yeah.
There's a done in 1927.
Yeah.
Well, it's a good tune,
yeah?
It was?
Yeah, I got it. Okay. You want to play it?
Well, I can play it.
All right, Cowboys and Damien, back next week.
Yeah.
a production of Multimedia.